And comrade chairman and comrades, we are at the beginning of a tumultuous and an enormously revolutionary epoch. We'll see the red 90s. If we examine just for a brief moment world events of the present time, we see in El Salvador the government on its last legs, although it might last a year, two, 3 years more. Unfortunately, as a consequence of guerrillaism, which will give reinforce the lunacy of guerrillaism in probably in the whole of Latin America, in spite of the experience of Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil. But at any rate, that in itself is a symptom of the crisis in the underdeveloped world. In the developed world, we have just the beginning of a movement of workers in Britain, in France, in Holland, not in Holland, in Belgium, in Italy. We have enormous, and this is just a dress rehearsal. But above all, we have the crisis in the Stalinist states. And all of these crises, perhaps in a different way in the Stalinist states, are nevertheless crises of the productive forces. The fact that under capitalism the productive forces will not be able to be developed, that is inevitable, will be shown inevitably in the next period, in the developed countries. In the underdeveloped world, it's quite apparent. In the Stalinist world, decades late perhaps, and prognosis is still correct, even if it takes decades to reach fulfillment, longer than perhaps Trotsky could have anticipated, or that we could have anticipated, but we see the Trotsky's battle in the interwar period, first of all against Stalinism, second against all varieties of revisionists, against the Shockmanites and state capitalists and all the riffraff, is shown to be completely justified. Because what we see in the Soviet Union and now in the whole of Eastern Europe and already incipiently in China is that Stalinism is an aberration from socialism. It's not a new society. It's not a new form of capitalism. And inevitably, it has driven the productive forces into a complete blind alley. In Russia, in Eastern Europe, and already the beginning of the process at any rate, which will reach fruition at a later stage, in China also. So we're at the beginning of an enormous epoch of revolution and of counter-revolution, the most disturbed period in human history. Even in our international, even in the tops of the international, there's a certain wavering in the last period. And that was the pressures of capitalism on the one hand, The boom, which is lost at ATS, which has lost at ATS, and so on. But that can now be dismissed as a result of the developments that are taking place at the present time. And what we see is revolution and counter-revolution. Well, I have to deal with, my main remarks will be on Russia, but I have to deal with this process of revolution and counter-revolution in Russia, in the and the other countries of Stalinism. And the same process will be apparent also in the developed capitalist countries. But the one thing that comes out of the process that's taking place in Eastern Europe, the one thing that we have to burn into the consciousness of every single member of the tendency on an international scale, right throughout the international, it's the enormous power of the masses when they begin to move. In East Germany, an industrially developed state, more developed probably than the other countries of Eastern Europe, in Czechoslovakia, also more developed than the other countries of Eastern Europe. But in Czechoslovakia and in and that's within a matter of days, 10, 12 days. We see the enormous power of the mass when they move. And we see how correct Trotsky was when he said, if when the masses move, the bureaucracy will be suspended in midair. You have this enormous movement of the mass of the working class, an unparalleled movement, a magnificent movement. And we should remember that the same movement will be apparent in Madrid, in Paris, in London, in Chicago, in New York, in Tokyo, in Australia. That what we're seeing in East Germany, in particular, and in Czechoslovakia also now, is the beginning of the world revolution. We saw in '68 the way the French masses moved. The marvelous movement of the French working class, which is only betrayed by the Communist Party. And we will see similar movements inevitably. With the power which has been accumulated by the working class, again, as in before the war, in Spain, in France, in Italy, in Germany, in West Germany, that is, and so on. And you see the complete unease of the strategists of capital when they observe the movement in East Germany and in Czechoslovakia in particular. They're terrified of this movement of masses. They're afraid, as Bush put it, that the movement can get out of control. That you can get an enormous movement of the class, which will not be easy to break. If the subjective factor existed in East Germany, an important tendency even, and in Czechoslovakia, then we'd be on the eve of the victory of the political revolution with all that that would mean. And the way in which the revolution moved from one country to another country, from Poland to Hungary, to East Germany, to Bulgaria, to Czechoslovakia, I'm not going to deal in any detail with it because we have a special session on East Germany and on Czechoslovakia. And we have the position, how the movement will develop. What we predicted, what many comrades have been skeptical about, we said once there'll be one revolutionary victory in one important country of the world, Then inevitably it will spread throughout the world. That's the meaning of world revolution. That's the meaning of the process that we've seen at the present time. And by the way, what is left of the once mighty Communist International? The Italian Communist Party is openly turning itself into a reformist party. We wish them Godspeed. We have the situation where the British Communist Party is also now beginning to liquidate itself. And in a comical way, I have the quotation here if the comrades want to see it. He actually says, this Jax, that we based ourselves on socialism in one country and national roads to socialism. And that doesn't work. The conclusions he draws from it, of course, are completely reformist ones. And not only Stalin was wrong, but now emptying the baby with the bathwater, they're emptying out Lenin as well. I want to go back to the Second International. And all this has the benison of Gorbachev, who meets with these gangsters, these revisionists, and approves. He actually approves of the developments that are taking place. And of course, as a consequence of the crimes of the bureaucracy, who in the great days of the Communist International turned it into a border guard, for the defense of the Soviet Union. And as a consequence of decades of opportunism, they cannot look to any support from the Communist International and will be terrified anyway, as they were in 1968, when it seemed that the French workers were going to take power. Because that would mean the end of the bureaucracy, the end of the privileges which they built up over a period of 65 to 67 years. And therefore, this process of revolution and counter-revolution, of the complete blind alley and impasse of Stalinism on a world scale, and above all, in the countries where they have power. The way in which Trotsky pictured it. He said the proletariat was invincible. And even where fascism had conquered, he said the proletariat was depressed, atomized, demoralized. But the moment that they started to move, inevitably, and then we see that in the Stalinist states, inevitably they would just brush aside the fascist regimes. And that undoubtedly, his faith and confidence in the working class, that faith and confidence which we've echoed throughout the history of our tendency, throughout the history of our international, has been vindicated now by the development of events. And the capitalists have had an access of confidence in the developed capitalist countries. Communism doesn't work, they say, mixing up communism and Stalinism. And our system works, at least in a small minority of countries, the developed countries of the world. But, as we've said in many speeches in Britain, they're rubbing their hands at the moment, although with unease, they'll be rubbing their behinds at a later stage on the basis of the development of the events. We must emphasize that point to every comrade, that this, no matter what results it has in Eastern Europe and in Russia, that this is the beginning of the world revolution, of a period of turmoil unexampled in history. That has to be emphasized again, again, and again. Now, in 10 days, the Czech regime was powerless once the broad masses began to move. And in reality, in East Germany and in Czechoslovakia, they've got the best results of the Stalin states. They've been going ahead, crawling ahead, if you like, from possibilities, but 3 or 4% a year. And in every case now, they'll have to reject the lunacy of socialism in one country. It was this that destroyed the Communist International. It was this that destroyed the movement towards socialism in Russia. And now, such is the blind alley, they're even developing the productive forces at a lower rate in Russia, at a lower rate when in the capitalist countries in periods of boom. In Eastern Europe, in Poland and Hungary in particular, not so much Czechoslovakia and East Germany, where the productive force was still being developed, although at a slow rate. But in Poland and Hungary, it was an absolute bureaucratic impasse. The productive forces had come to reach their limits under the system, under the madness of socialism in one country, of the lunacy of Stalin in keeping Eastern Europe disunited, instead of organizing a federation in Eastern Europe of the of all those countries into a Balkan federation and then linked to the Soviet Union. He kept them deliberately disunited, and in each country where the appeal to nationalism, to national socialism, to socialism in a single country, and the lunacy of building up steel plants, machine tool plants in Poland, in Hungary with a population of 10 million, in Czechoslovakia with a population of 16, 17 millions, trying to compete with Western Europe, the mighty economies of Western Europe, of France, of Britain, of Italy, of Japan, America, and so on. Absolute lunacy. And as a consequence, bring the productive forces to a complete standstill under the bureaucracy. And so rotted has the bureaucracy become that in those countries, in Poland, the workers tried to carry through the political revolution. That's the reality of the situation in 1980-81. They failed. Because there was no political party, because there was no revolutionary tendency, because of the betrayal of solidarity, and that prepared the way for reaction. And a movement, as we said at the IEC, the last IEC, in Poland and in Hungary, a movement in the direction of counter-revolution, a movement in the direction of capitalism, which means a complete capitulation has taken place to imperialism, which means that they're not prepared to come into conflict, that they want to try and arrive at a compromise and agreement, and therefore that turns Gorbachev and the other elements in Eastern Europe into agents of imperialism. Let's be clear about that. And at the moment, in Hungary, the Communist Party just collapsed. Pozgay turned a party of 730,000 members into a party of 15,000. The new party, the Socialist Party, which, by the way, has applied for affiliation to the Second International. Whether they get it or not remains to be seen. announce that they stand for a mixed economy, for bourgeois democracy. In other words, that they stand for counter-revolution. And therefore the prime mover in this counter-revolution has been the bureaucracy in Hungary, which is turning itself into bourgeois, trying to buy hand over, because they haven't got the money to buy it, the industry, leaving perhaps heavy industry at this stage, at any rate, under control of the state, and denationalizing light industry. And it's a wonderful program they have. Price rises. The only beneficial thing about the Stalinist regimes is that they subsidized transport, they subsidized food, they subsidized housing, telephones, electricity, gas, and so on, which is an enormous achievement to the regimes, by the way. And it's this achievement to the regimes that they want to abolish. And if they dared, they'd do that in Russia too. But they're afraid of the reaction of the masses. But in Hungary, and we have the position where Pozgay has been the chief leader moving towards counter-revolution. What a marvelous understanding he has of theory and of the processes of the development of society. Because he wants to go to bourgeois democracy, to go onto the world market as a mixed economy. The idea of autarky is now broken throughout Eastern Europe. It's been utterly crushed. And therefore, you have the position that they want to move towards a glittering facade of bourgeois democracy. And the joke is, in agreement with the opposition, Pozgay prepared himself to be the president, at least, a nice little niche of a bourgeois, because that's what it amounts to, Hungary. And even that he won't get. According to one of the observers of the bourgeois correspondents of the Observer, a virulent anti-communism is now sweeping Hungary. And that's probably true. The inaction of the workers is due to the defeat of 1956, which was a crushing defeat, a terrible defeat in blood. But in the main, because they do not see a perspective of an alternative at this stage. But at any rate, Pozgay has this illusion that they will have a nice second international regime. And naturally, the traitors of the second international, of the social democracy and of the Communist Party in other countries, have all embraced bourgeois democracy, have not understood what we explained at the last IEC, but I must reinforce those points. The bourgeois democracy will not be possible for any length of time in any of these countries. And in Hungary already, the more percipient elements, the status of capital, are now saying what we said already months ago, that democracy will not be able to last in Hungary, and therefore are advocating a liberal bourgeois dictatorship. I don't know how you get a liberal dictatorship, unless you mean one like Horthy with his white terror, or one like Pilsudski with his terror. They're now picturing them as Democrats, Horthy and Pilsudski. But in any case, after the experience of the workers the last 40 years, the idea that they will tolerate, the workers will tolerate for any length of time, even with a white terror, which would obviously be inevitable, a bourgeois dictatorship. In Hungary, and also the same process is taking place in Poland. And it's obvious, particularly if we take the experience of Poland, the oneness that they're offering in Hungary, also mass unemployment, price increases, all the oneness of capitalism in crisis. In Poland, the same. I think I quoted these figures last time. But I'll quote them again. 40% unemployment in Poland. 40. Much unemployment in Hungary too, but 40% unemployment in Poland. 6,000% increase in prices of transport and rents. An end to subsidies on food and the other subsidies. And that is a program that is certainly the Polish workers will not tolerate. Well, Lessie himself has said, we've got 6 months to a year. Otherwise, there's going to be an explosion. And an explosion is absolutely inevitable. 6, 12, 18 months, more or less. It could be 3 months, it could be more. But 6, 12, 18 months would be the time scale, probably. Of an absolute explosion, as we had in 1980-81, and as we had in the other periods in Poland. And the idea that solidarity can do what the Stalinist regime, when it's in this regime of totalitarian dictatorship, couldn't do, is absolutely ludicrous. Particularly as the elements of democracy exist at the present time. In Poland, the perspectives, just briefly, I'm dealing with the perspectives of Hungary and Poland. East Germany and Czechoslovakia will be dealt with by Tony. What? Oh, no. Well, you should have told me before.
I did tell you.
I didn't. I didn't tell you it's just one. I've made more extensive remarks on Poland and Hungary, but I'll make some remarks in that case on East Germany and Czechoslovakia as well. But in what are the perspectives then? With a tendency there, not a party, but even a tendency with cadres. In the period of confusion and explosions that will take place, and it's even possible that the workers could take power as they did in Hungary in 1956, in the immediate perspective, it's either a bourgeois dictatorship, because very quickly solidarity will have exhausted itself. The idea that solidarity can maintain itself with the program that they have and the perspectives that they have is ludicrous. And by the way, all this whole process in Eastern Europe and in Russia, apart from the crisis of the regimes, is also due to the 25 years of economic upswing between 50 and 75, and also the 8 years of boom, which we had, rat slump in the West at any rate, in the developed capitalist countries, which has had its effect in Russia and the whole of Eastern Europe. And it's led to the delusion that the economy can be developed on a capitalist basis, as long as there's participation on the world market, of which every country is a constituent part. So shorts in one country goes out of the window everywhere, although of course they still maintain they've got socialism everywhere, in Eastern Europe and in Russia. But the idea of autarky is finished. And it's the reward for the crimes of Stalin, what he was too obtuse to see, the crisis that exists in Eastern Europe. Now in Poland, there's four ways out. There can be a return to capitalism for a time, which would end in a military police dictatorship, or there can be chaos, that's a possibility, anarchy, which will be ended either by a bourgeois dictatorship or a Stalinist dictatorship, or the fourth alternative, that the workers can take power, can create a party in the process of the battles that lie ahead. On a bourgeois basis is the worst of perspectives. In Russia they're tolerating this process. In the West, see how they get on. But it's clear that there can be no perspective of a development of capitalism in any of the countries, possibly East Germany might be an exception for a time, in these countries. That at best, they would be like the regimes in the interwar period, satellites and agents of imperialism. In the interwar period, it was France and Britain that dominated this area. Above all, France. Now it's more likely to be Germany. But even so, we see that the bourgeoisie in reality has no confidence whatsoever in this perspective. Because what they're offering in aid is peanuts. I've got the figures if the communists want them. I'll give a few. Hungary, 500 million over the next 3 years. 500 million pounds. Yes, for Hungary. $1 billion stabilization fund for Poland. $1 billion bridging loan for Hungary. And Cinderella, $200 million grant from the United States. A $250 million grant for West Germany. France and Italy are going to give or lend at concessional rates similar amounts. The United States is going to give a $938 million aid package, which is food and other things. In other words, absolute peanuts. Because they've lent $40 million. $40,000 million, I'm sorry, to Poland. And it's really like a drop of water on a hot stove. Like a drop of water on a hot stove.